Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
And thanks for listening this week. For the past 2 years, the U.S. military has had an increased focus on what it terms professionalism. Ever since then-Secretary Chuck Hagel announced the Pentagon's first senior advisor for professionalism in the wake of some well-publicized ethical lapses among military personnel, including a cheating scandal in the Air Force and an investigation into bribery in the Navy that continues to this day. The Army and Marine Corps have long had centers of excellence that focus on professional development. Over the past 2 years, the Air Force and Navy have stood up their own. On the program this time, we talk to the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence, or PACE, retired Air Force Colonel Jeffrey Smith. Smith talked with me by phone from his office at Joint Base San Antonio about why the Air Force created the center and the work it's done in the little over a year since it's been up and running.
You know, the institutional health is an important consideration for every organization. And in fact, one of the things that we look at in terms of trying to measure the health of an organization is whether or not they're willing to do some inward looks and do some self-reflection of how they can get better. And so the chief, General Welsh, you know, he took a look around and said, we can always get better, and we're, especially when it comes to professionalism and core values. You know, this is a mountain without a top. You never arrive, and institutions never arrive. It's something you constantly have to be dealing with. And his understanding was very clear that institutional health is really a process of connecting our values to our mission. If we get our mission done, but we sacrifice our values, then we're clearly not the institution that we need to be or that we're called to be. It's kind of like when an athlete, you know, uses a drug or dopes a drug to be able to do their mission or succeed in a particular competition better. They've sacrificed their values for their mission. All institutions and all people have to deal with that. And so PACE was developed to try to infuse within the institution of the Air Force a higher degree of professionalism. And we define professionalism as the art of leading oneself. What kind of airman do we want to be? And that will result in what kind of institution we are. So that was the going in position, is how can we get better? Not that we were broken or that we had some significant problem that we had to overcome. We weren't in crisis mode. It was just a healthy question that the chief asked, how can we get better? And PACE was born.
And maybe we should say a few words more about, you know, just to define what professionalism is. I mean, sure, everybody's got ideas in their head about what that word means, but there must be some discrete measures that you're looking at if you're trying to make improvements.
Well, you know, that's interesting because this can go back to Huntington. There's been a lot of work done through the years, literature on what a profession is, what professionalism is. And how it's used within a title, say the profession of arms. And so there's actually a lot of moving parts in this, and what we've tried to do is simplify it, but just kind of as an overview or as a context, you know, a profession is normally something that has a set of expectations and standards that are above just a non-professional enterprise. So, for example, there's normally a code of conduct. There's often an oath associated with it. If you think of, becoming a lawyer, becoming a doctor, maybe something in theology, the same with the profession of arms in the military. There's an oath. There's often a creed. Many times the institution, a professional institution, will be self-policing. It has internal dynamics and mechanisms that determine whether or not, for example, as a lawyer, you have done something that would make you lose your license, or in the medical field, lose your license to practice. There's this self-policing attribute to it. So there's always a set of expectations and standards with anything that's considered a profession. A professional, of course, is just the personnel or the person that is within that particular institution that are basically held to the standards and expectations that institution requires. Specifically within the profession of arms, you know, if you think about what we mean by the profession of arms, if profession is a standard or expectation, and arms, quite frankly, are weapons, they're military weapons, we're designed as a body, as an institution, to have an expectation and a high standard to the development and employment of weapons. That's fundamentally what militaries do. And so the profession of arms has its own internal expectations and standards. And our focus is on the human element of that, in terms of the Air Force, it would be if you want to be a member of our Air Force, then you have to have either shown up with the core values of integrity, service, and excellence, or you need to begin the process, the life journey of modifying your value system to accept those. That's the price of admission. That's what requires. That's what we require for membership in the United States Air Force, is an adherence to our core values. And that is self-policing. It's why we have a UCMJ. It's why we have internal Air Force instructions, and we self-police that very strongly. So how do we bring all that together? We bring all that together with the term professionalism. Professionalism, we teach, is a verb. It's actually something that you do. It's the art of leading oneself. It's the decisions we make. It's the person we are both on and off duty. It's our reputation. It's the kind of parent we are. It's the kind of spouse we are. It's the kind of leader, the kind of friend. It really goes beyond just meeting the capabilities of whether or not I'm performing my job well. It also goes deeper than that and says, you know, how does this affect who I am as a person? Not just what I do, but how I do it. And so when we teach professionalism, this is really more of a human element. As a matter of fact, one of the things that comes out of our fundamental course, which is called Enhancing Human Capital, is this idea that if you want to be a better airman, then you've really got to start by being a better person, because airmen are subsets of people. So if we start at the source of where airmen come from, which is the human phenomenon, and we begin to focus on what that means and how we make life choices and how those choices then affect other people around us, we then define that as the sense of professionalism within our particular institution. So we consider it a verb, an action word. It's something that specifically bridges what we value to what we do.
And so if the overarching goal is to increase professionalism, one imagines that one of your first tasks has to be to kind of figure out what the baseline is, I assume. So in the year or so that the PACE has been up and running, are there particular areas within the force that you've been able to identify where you think you're really already succeeding at professionalism writ large, and conversely, particular areas where you think the Air Force has work to do?
Sure, absolutely. And that's the same with any institution. This is the inevitable question that all organizations have to ask themselves is, you know, what are we doing well and what can we do better? Let's use an example, Blockbuster Video. 5 years ago, you couldn't throw a rock without hitting a Blockbuster Video on every corner in any city. And today, where are they? They're gone. They failed to adapt to changing context. Well, any institution, the Air Force in this case in particular, has to adapt to changing context. And so as social norms change, as conflict internationally changes, and all of those are very measurable, the profession of arms has to adapt as well. And its people and its personnel have to understand what their identity and what their role is within that context. So one of the things that we look at, of course, in terms of institutional health is, you know, what are we doing in terms of our retention rates, or maybe our suicide rates, and what do we see in terms of maybe what the punitive measurements may be? Those are the negative side of the things. They say if those are increasing, obviously maybe there's a character or a morale or a concern in terms of behavior. But there's also positive elements to look at. For example, you know, what is the diversity level? Are we increasing in diversity and inclusion in our institution? Do more people see a worthwhile home here in terms of their lives in the Air Force? So that's a very positive thing that we can begin to measure. We can also begin to look at things, for example, as, you know, what are the people saying about the service? Do we have internal measurements where we take climate assessments, for example, and people say, yeah, I love my job, or I love the leadership, or are they saying the opposite? I don't trust my leadership, or I wished I could do something else. So all of these are measurements that we can take, and we do take on a routine basis. I know the RAND Corporation is working on a lot of that. We've seen a lot of that data be produced over the years. Some of my independent work looked at that when I was doing my doctoral work as well. So we can take all of the different measurements, and then we have to make an assessment. What does that mean to us as an institution? Where are we, and where do we need to go? And what I find to be very, very pleasing about the Air Force is that, you know, we're not afraid to look at the areas that we need to improve in. In fact, the worst thing that an institution can do is to try to bury those things or to try to make sure they don't make the news. Institutional health is often measured on the ability of an institution to be transparent about those areas where it needs to improve. And the Air Force is wide open in that regard. I've seen no signs of the Air Force ever trying to bury or spin or rewrite the way things are happening. We have issues we need to deal with. We can be better leaders. We can develop and recruit folks that have a higher desire for commitment, loyalty, and trust in the profession of arms. But we just have to continue to work at that every single day. So I think the baseline is there by the fact that we're a profession that has to bring in a certain type and quality of people. And then we have to maintain and grow those people. And we have good measurements across the Air Force to look at that. Some of those are positive, some of those are negative. But in combination, that gives us an idea of where we're at and maybe where we need to go.
And you mentioned the climate surveys. I wonder if you can share what that data set or any of the other data that you've been gathering has told you about specific areas where you need to target your efforts. Or is that the wrong way to think about it? Is it more about, as you said earlier, just making people better as a whole person?
Well, that's a great question, Jerry, because, you know, often what happens is this is the analogy I use. So let's say we're a gardener and we're looking at a lawn, a grass yard, and we're in charge of this grass. And we want to make the grass healthy and green and viable. We're in charge of that. That's our responsibility. Often what institutions can find themselves doing is they become myopic on the weeds. So they'll see a weed and they'll go over with their Roundup and they'll come up with policy and plans and programs. And although maybe only a half a percentage of the people are really the perpetrators, if you will, you know, 100% of the people have to be subject to that program or that plan. And that Roundup, although it may deal specifically with the weed, it probably also kills some pretty healthy grass. Just about the time you think, okay, we've dealt with that problem, you turn around and there's another big weed that pops up and another one and another one. And before too long, you know, you kind of look over your lawn and what you really see is instead of this healthy, green, vibrant grass, you see all these dead circles where you've not only maybe had to deal with weeds, but you've also probably hurt some of the good green grass in the process, whether it's lost man hours. If we stand down the entire Air Force for a down day, for example, you know, how many hundreds, thousands of man hours have been lost to do that? So we have to ask ourselves, is that the best model? Another model, and this is the model that PACE tries to look at, is why don't we focus instead on feeding the good grass? So let's spend our time fertilizing the good grass and teaching people what right looks like so well that wrong becomes pretty obvious. If anything, wrong becomes a taboo and right becomes a norm. This is how you change a culture, is you affect the norms. We did that, for example, in this country with seatbelt wearing. It's just now normal to put on a seatbelt, even to the point that if you took the laws away to wear a seatbelt, most people today will get in and put their seatbelt on, not because they're afraid of getting a ticket, but because it's now normal behavior. We did the same thing in this country with littering. If littering laws went away today, the vast majority of people would not just start littering because there wouldn't be a consequence. It's just taboo to litter. It's now become an American norm, if you will. So the same dynamic has to happen in the United States Air Force. There are certain behaviors that need to go beyond just we will correct them through a carrot and stick. Instead, what we will do is just make good behavior normal behavior. And what that does is it gets us back to an earlier point that I made where the institution becomes self-policing. So a self-policing institution will be one where a particular airman will see an activity that is less than normal or taboo, for example, that another airman may do, and they'll look at him and they'll call him out peer-to-peer and say, that's not what we do in the Air Force. That's not the way we live our lives, and that's unacceptable. When an institution becomes self-correcting, then the green grass seems to grow. But to kind of finalize that analogy, you know, I'm also a realist. There's still going to be weeds that pop up, and that happens because it's part of the human phenomenon. But instead of using Roundup that kills the weed and every good grass that it touches, you know, the analogy probably needs to be changed to weed and feed. So we need to deal with the weeds, let there be no doubt. And we have an accountability system for that we won't lose sight of. But we need to do it in such a way, whether it's policy or through the judge advocate or to the way we administer discipline or accountability, that it's not at the stake of the good grass. So weed and feed will deal with the weeds, but it will also at the same time send a clear positive message to those people who are doing things right, that this is what normal looks like, and this is what taboo behavior would look like, or unhealthy behavior for that matter. So that's probably the best way to kind of summarize our approach, is we're really trying to take a very positive approach to behavior and teach people what right looks like.
That's Dr. Jeffrey Smith, the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence. We'll come back and talk more about the Air Force's approach to professionalism after a short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. We're back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. And getting back to our conversation with Dr. Jeff Smith, the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence, or PACE. Air Force Chief of Staff General Mark Welsh created that center a year ago, saying he didn't see any specific problems with professionalism, but there's always room for improvement.
Back on the culture point, Rear Admiral Peg Klein, who I'm sure you work very closely with, but just for our for our listeners, she's the Secretary of Defense point person on professionalism. Anyway, she was quoted a couple months ago saying that the Army and the Marine Corps seem to have more developed cultures of professionalism at the moment than the Navy and the Air Force. That's a paraphrase, not a direct quote. But, you know, agree or disagree, feel free. And if you agree, what might be some of the reasons for that?
Well, you know, if you talk to the Admiral about that a little bit, she was a little apologetic. She was, in fact, taken somewhat out of context in that regard. What she really implied in that, and I've talked to her about this several times, is all of the services have high quality programs that do a great job. It's just that the Air Force and the Navy have some of their programs are newer programs that have been stood up more recently. So she was kind of taken out of context in that regard. And but this is what we know, and the Admiral knows this as well, is all the services take very, very serious what it is that that our character and our identity tells the American people. It's one of the reasons why the military is the single most trusted organization in the country. And that has in large measure to do with our people and the quality of our identity and our mindset. And that's standard whether you're a Marine or you're a Coast Guardsman or you're an airman, you're a soldier. Across the board, our services all hold themselves to a very high account. You know, but we're also realists. We understand that anytime you have people, especially in a volunteer force, you're going to have people who do things maybe that are inappropriate and that need to be corrected. And it's the reason why, interestingly enough, we have our own judicial system. The UCMJ is unique to the profession of arms, and we hold people accountable actually to a much higher level than they would in a non-military environment. And I think that while the other services all have their unique courses and their unique processes, we've got to understand that that's a result of the fact that each one of the services are unique in and of themselves. So, for example, in the Marines, you know, the Marines have a phenomenal ethos. They've been doing this right for a long time. But their context is unique as well. They have a lot of young men and women, a lot of young warriors who are up close and personal with the enemy. And that requires a mindset. That requires a level of commitment, loyalty, and trust that is not better or worse than any other organization, but it's unique to them. The Marines have to have a very unique mindset based on the nature of their warfighting needs. The Navy, you know, think about the Navy. The Navy, for the most part, their primary mission is often to leave a port and be out in the open seas for sometimes months on end. This becomes its own rolling city to a degree, and that requires everything from laundry to lawyers to daily routines of operational missions. That's a unique sea power perspective that requires a very unique identity within those folks that serve in that category. The same could be said about the Army, and of course the same could be said about the Air Force. The Air Force is a very unique capability. We're a capability that controls and demands attention in three dimensions. and specifically within higher ground. And whether that applies to cyber or space or air-breathing machines, this is a unique airman's perspective of access, speed, and strategic strike. So the point here is that we have to take consideration of the context we're in. There is no one-size-fits-all. There is no service that's better or worse. It's the wrong question. It is whether or not that service is taking the necessary steps to continue to build a healthy future identity. And I would say every service is doing that very, very well in their own unique context. And the Air Force, I think, is doing that very well. And we have for years, but we got to get better. And the Marines have got to get better. And the Coast Guard and the Navy, all of us can get better. Again, these are attributes of a mountain without a top. I don't think a discussion about the context of the profession of arms would be appropriate without quoting Carl von Clausewitz. Clausewitz said this. He said, "The first, the supreme, the most far-reaching act of judgment that a statesman and commander must make is to first determine the type of engagement upon which he's embarking, never mistaking it for nor turning it into something alien to its nature." And what Carl is saying here is we've got to take into account the context we're given, not the context we had or the context we wish we had, but the context we're given. And so within today's context of ISIS and terrorism and fairly significant global unrest, new technologies that are being acquired by organizations who are less than nation states, conflicts and changes and fiscal restraints. When you take in all of the dynamics, we have to ask ourselves, what does this mean in terms of the type of airman we need? You know, what do we need to be in our ranks? And what does their mindset need to be? What does airman mean to them? And what does an air-mindedness perspective look like today? And I can tell you that's a different perspective than it was in World War II or Vietnam or even in the 90s. There's common characteristics, but there's also uniquely new characteristics because the context has changed. And that's what I think that each individual service has to take into account is how does their requirement for national security and the unique context that they are required to provide, how does that affect the type of individual that they need within their rank and file? And that's an important question. And I can speak directly for the Air Force in that regard, and that is that we need innovative airmen. We need airmen who are willing to think out of the box, airmen who are willing to take on the mantle of technology, not necessarily worship it, but employ it and figure out exactly how we can make tomorrow better than today, not only in terms of lethality and national security, but also in terms of how do we raise up that next generation of airmen that can do it better than we've done it. And that's really what our focus is. And I think the Admiral made that very clear in her interview. How it came out in the title line was different than I think she intended it to be. But each service has its own unique perspective, and we're very proud of what the Air Force is stepping up to do in a very real way. In fact, we just had a DOD, under Admiral Klein, had the DOD professionalism symposium that was hosted by the United States Air Force Academy and co-hosted with PACE, Profession of Arms Center of Excellence, out in Colorado Springs. And we had all the services come together, and we all learned from each other. We all, there was some great synergies that came out of that. There's some things other services are doing that we've kind of adopted and said, well, that will work for us, and things we're doing that they've adopted. So the idea is that there is a commonality among the DOD, and that's obviously national security, but individually the services have to ask themselves, what kind of personnel do I want, and what does that mean in terms of shaping their professional growth?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that summit. I mean, respecting your earlier point that all the services are unique, but what are the things that you learn in a venue like that are applicable across the entire joint force?
Right. So there are a lot of commonalities. Obviously, we all fall within the profession of arms. Remember, this is a standard and expectation to weapon systems that ultimately result in, hopefully, the dynamic of national defense. We all serve the American people. On a more individual basis, whether you're a Marine or a soldier or an airman, It doesn't matter what part of the service you come from. All of us individually would like to bring out a better version of ourselves. All of us would like tomorrow to be better than today. And maybe the most important thing is all of us individually would like to have a better future self than our current self. In fact, that's the definition of human hope, is seeing a better future self than our current self. And those are all common denominators. And interestingly enough, these are also common denominators, whether you're 6, 26, or 66. So this transcends generational bias. This transcends generational perspective. If you're 18 years old and you're fresh out of high school and you're entering the service, you'd like a better future self than your current self. You'd like to work for people that have the skill sets to bring out a better version of you, that can be a mentor, a counselor, a coach, that can talk you through what your future would look like and can give you some guidance along the way. That's common to every service. And the question is, how do we do that? And we find that there's a lot of common ways to do that. And maybe the most important consideration is the development of effective leaders. Leadership in and of itself is the single most important attribute of a healthy institution when it comes to developing the culture. Leaders, in large measure, own the environment. In fact, we'll say that leaders have the environment requirement. Show me an organization that is unhealthy, that doesn't follow its values, that is continually finding itself on the wrong side of the values equation, and you will more than likely see that that stems from a problem in leadership. On the other hand, if you find an organization that is healthy, that's making good value judgments, that is balancing and sometimes even sacrificing what it will and will not do in its mission based on its value system, and you will likely find that that resonates first and foremost from the leadership. The leadership have the environment requirement, and this is standard across the entire DoD. It doesn't matter whether you're working for the Navy or for the Air Force, leadership is paramount to the success not only of our current operations, but to developing and raising up that next generation of leaders who will own this process long down the road. So the commonalities from a strategic perspective are unwavering. How we operationalize some of those concepts differ based on the context that are different within the services.
Dr. Jeffrey Smith is the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence, or PACE, based at Joint Base San Antonio. We'll talk more after another break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Thanks for listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbia. Our guest this week is Dr. Jeff Smith, the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence. We've been talking about how the military defines professionalism and the training materials the new center's been creating for airmen and civilians over the past year.
And Dr. Smith, I don't want to let you go without talking about some of the specific materials you're generating to increase professionalism. When you go to the PACE website, I see you've got your training materials and resources broken down into four different audiences, officers, enlisted, civilian, and interestingly, families. Talk about the tools that you're churning out in the context of those four different audiences, because clearly you've recognized that they are different.
Yeah, they are different. But again, there's some subtlety in this conversation. They're different in a lot of ways, but they're also uniquely the same. Which is kind of a bit of a paradox. So all of the airmen, whether you're active duty, guard, reserve, or civilian in the United States Air Force, we all share a common denominator, and that is we serve at the pleasure of the United States Air Force. We're not a job program. We are here for one reason and one reason only, and that's U.S. national security. So the commonality that bonds us together is the fact that we all have the same strategic mission. And that doesn't matter where you work or whether you're a GS-7 or a general officer or an SES, guard or reserve. But the commonality is that we serve for the Air Force and that service is directed towards U.S. national security. So what we try to do is we try to take those common strategies and we build programs that bring us together as a single fight. So for example, we'll have a Heritage Today video, which goes back, you know, even to pictures of World War I, World War II, Vietnam, our heritage, those shoulders we stand on. And then we transform that perspective, that identity of what it means to be an airman into future operations. And, for example, we've had somebody that has said, well, I don't see, you know, as a civilian, I don't see myself in any of those combat scenarios. So how do I relate to that film? And what we found out as we began to investigate this further is civilians, for the most part, are high-fiving themselves after they see they're high-fiving their civilian engineers and electrical engineers and support and admin troops, because they realize that none of those things happen in combat without the civilian support. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to connect the end state of national security to the accomplishments of all of our people. We can't do what we do without civilians. We can't do what we do without our enlisted team and without our officer corps and across our board in the total force. So the first thing we try to do with our tools is we try to have a common denominator that says we're all in this together. No one group is more important than the other. It really is a process of synergy that brings us together into a fighting force for national security. But we also understand that there are individual needs. So if I'm an active duty officer or enlisted, for example, we deploy on a routine basis. You know, we miss anniversaries and Christmases. And we also understand very clearly that the nature of our job could, in fact, lead to giving our ultimate sacrifice, our lives. And that means kids without a mom or a dad, and that means a spouse without a husband or a wife. And this is a reality that is, in fact, unique to this lifestyle within this profession. And so those are conversations we have to have directly with our people that are going downrange and putting themselves in harm's way on a pretty routine basis. But we also know that, for example, with our families, we like to use the statement that we recruit airmen, but we retain families. We have to have the type of an environment where families also believe that the sacrifice they're making is worthwhile. In fact, one of the things that we're developing now is for our family, and this is in close correspondence with Miss Betty Welsh, General Welsh's wife, is this dynamic that our families serve right alongside our active duty and Guard and Reserve folks. Our families serve. So 15 moves over a 25-year career, our families serve. Three high schools, girlfriends and boyfriends that we say goodbye to as teenagers, sports teams that we're on that we have to leave, church groups that we have to leave. Our families serve. There's a sacrifice associated with what it means. Our spouses, in many cases, are professional spouses. They're teachers, they're pharmacists, they're doctors, they're lawyers. And we find that when a spouse has to move with their active duty or their military spouse to another state, their certificates and their licenses don't transfer, and their profession suffers from it. And in many cases, this creates a real amount of turbulence. And in those cases where our families decide that the service to the military is where they want to be, there is, in fact, a measurable sacrifice for families. So the point we're making here is that this isn't a military member's profession. This is, in fact, a family profession. And it's something we all share. And we like to summarize what that is in a single term called ethos. This ethos that we share in our military profession and in the Air Force. If you've worn the cloth and you've been that family that's PCS'd and struggled and had your spouse go down range in harm's way, they know what that means. They know what it feels like. They know what they see when they look in the mirror. They see an Air Force family that serves and sacrifices for their country. And that doesn't matter whether you're the 8-year-old that's leaving your best friend because you're moving again, or you're the spouse that has to put their profession kind of on hold in some cases. So the family piece of this is huge, and we have a number of tools that really try to direct and pull that out as a phenomenon that we need to take into consideration. And all of our tools are really designed to meet three underlying principles of human behavior, and that's commitment, loyalty, and trust. And I'll kind of close this answer with this. You know, if I know what you know, find out what degrees you have, find out where you've been to school, understand what your knowledge base is, I have a very low probability of predicting what you will do in any given context. But if I know what you're committed to, if I know with whom and what your loyalties lie, and if I know with whom and what you trust, I have a much higher probability of determining what you will do in a given context. So within the profession of arms, because what we do is so important, whether it's a family member, a civilian, active duty, guard, or reserve, we have to have some level of predictability within this profession of human behavior, especially in combat. And the best way to harness that predictability is to focus on commitment, loyalty, and trust. What can we do to increase commitment to the profession of arms? What are those avenues and those attributes of a leader that will increase loyalty among the Corps? And what can we do specifically, whether it's leadership skills or policy or how we deploy our people or how we reward our people, that will build a level of institutional trust? Those three dynamics will in large measure either enable us or disable us, depending on how well we do with those. So all of our tools in PACE are designed around those three principles: increasing commitment, loyalty, and trust to the profession of arms.
Dr. Jeff Smith is the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence. We'll come back and talk more after one more break about some of the past ethical mishaps the Air Force is using as teaching tools in the pursuit of military professionalism. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servino. We're back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. A few minutes left with Dr. Jeffrey Smith, the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence. Among the work that new center has done over the past year has been to create a series of web-based teaching tools.
We don't have time to talk about each individual tool on the website, but let me just ask you about one of them, which is you've got about a half dozen vignettes of ethical mishaps across the Air Force. Talk about the decision to frame those as mishaps, first of all, and what are you trying to do through that specific tool?
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's a unique particular way of presenting it based on being airmen. So a mishap is often characterized as something that happens when you have an airplane accident. We follow checklists in airplanes. We have something that's called boldface. So those are those big, bold steps that you have to take if there's an emergency. Boldface, one of the things that we teach in terms of airmanship for our pilots, for example, is if you have a problem, maintain aircraft control, analyze the situation, and take appropriate action. Well, we've tried to take some of that same approach, that airman's perspective, if you will, and turn it into how will you deal with ethical crisis? How do you deal with ethical issues in your life? Well, you have to maintain ethical control. You have to analyze the situation, and you have to take appropriate action. So it's kind of a play on something we've taught in the service since our beginning in terms of how we teach aviation. And obviously, if you don't maintain ethical control, just like with an airplane, if you don't maintain aircraft control, you will have a mishap. So the idea is can we take some of the same nomenclature, some of the same language, lexicon, if you will, and relate it not to flying an airplane, but to flying our lives, if you will, leading ourselves. And so that's how we use the term mishap. That's how we use the term like glide slope. What glide slope are you on in your life? Well, glide slope is something that we use in approaches with the airplane coming down through the weather so that you have a safe landing. Well, we transition that to say, well, what glide slope is your life on? What are you doing to ensure that the path you're on will result in a positive end state? So that particular tool is unique, and we've tried to use some of the, just like we learn as pilots, for example, we learn from mishaps of other pilots. When there's something that's gone bad and there's been an airplane accident of some type, whether it's minor or major, you know, one of the things that pilots do is they learn from it. Here's something not to do, or here's something that, you know, we need to go into a simulator and we need to figure out how to do better. So it's the same thing we're trying to do with the particular tool you're talking about on our webpage. What can we look at in terms of ethical mishaps in the past that are real mishaps, that people have misstepped in terms of their character and the decisions they made? And what can we learn from that as a body of people and then take that lesson learned and build a better glide slope, a better path. Maybe we need to make an adjustment in the path that we're on. So that's what that tool is about. We get a lot of very positive feedback about it. But one unique thing I will say about it is, and this is kind of characteristics of a lot of the things PACE is doing, is you're not going to build a healthier culture. You're not going to make your institution better if it's just a process of just patting everybody on the back and saying how great we've done and how great the past has been. Although that's true, we are the single greatest Air Force on the planet, period, bar none. But we've also got to ask ourselves in this idea of self-reflection, how can we get better? And to do that, it requires serious, real, candid, and transparent self-reflection. So there are things in our institution that we know we can do better, that we maybe have allowed to slip or haven't given it the attention we need to give it. And that's an important consideration because it's the sign of a healthy institution. And if we don't do that, then, you know, just like if you're flying an ILS and you don't make appropriate corrections when you see that you're not on glide path, that landing probably isn't going to be what you want it to be. And it could actually be a crash landing. And as important as we are in the Air Force to national security, that's something that we simply can't afford to have.
Last thing, just to wrap us up, I mean, along this whole objective of increasing professionalism, I'm sure there's never going to be a mission accomplished moment. But how will you measure yourselves to see if you're at least making progress and hold yourselves accountable to ensure that there are at least improvements in professionalism?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Jerry, and it's a difficult question. And let me just share with you real quickly why it's difficult. So let's just all agree that trust is an important attribute of a healthy relationship, whether that's in your marriage or with your kids or in your institution. You lose trust. If your people lose trust, you're going to have a problem. In your marriage, if you lose trust, that's going to affect loyalty. And loyalty, if that's not fixed, is going to ultimately affect commitment. We call that divorce. Trust is foundational to any relationship, and it's no different in the Air Force. Our people have to not only trust each other, they have to trust their leadership, and they have to trust the institution. And so trust is vitally important. But when you think about it, what is trust? Trust is a feeling. How do you measure a feeling? How do you measure how much your spouse trusts you? And could you then somehow compare that on a scale to how much my spouse trusts me? I don't think you can. I think there's too many variables out there that would get in the way. But we also know that you need it. It's one of those interesting ideals in social science that says, I can't really measure it, but I know what happens if I don't have it. So let's say we lost trust. Let's go to the far left side of this equation. Say we lost trust in the institution as an Air Force. We would begin to see significant problems in retention rate. Maybe we would begin to have recruiting problems. Maybe there would be behavioral issues because people take their uniform off and they don't see themselves as airmen 24/7. They just see themselves in a job. That would be a dynamic that would give us some indications, at least some trends, that maybe we're having a bit of a trust problem. We can measure trust by asking people a qualitative question: do you trust your leadership? And depending on where that scale falls, if we have a unit, for example, that does a climate assessment and the feedback is that there seems to be a trust problem with leadership in this unit, then there's things that unit needs to begin to do to turn that around. So we can measure those things, and how will we know if we're successful in terms of an institution? There are some quantitative things we can measure. I would hope that a healthier organization sees a reduction of suicides. But if we had a reduction of suicides, would we be able to correlate that was a result of something PACE did? No, absolutely not. That wouldn't pass the science test because there's too many other variables. On the other hand, if we had retention rates improve, will we be able to say that that's a result of something PACE has done? I would like to say it is, but would we be able to correlate that? Likely not. There's too many other variables. But what we do know is that that trust is important, and we've got to teach it. And we know what it looks like when you don't have it. So it's a bit of a paradox, difficult to measure, but you know when you don't have it. And PACE will continue to measure when we can with feedback and critiques and online climate assessments, and we will really try to take that and modify our approach based on the needs of the Air Force. We know, for example, we've gone into a number of wings by invitation where they've said, you know, we just kind of feel like we need to improve the morale or the perspective of our wing. Can you come in and spend some time with our folks? And we'll go in and have all the folks on the wing in the auditorium and take them through a very inspirational course called Enhancing Human Capital that deals not just with the Air Force, but human decisions, the human phenomenon. How do you bring out a better version of yourself and a better version of the people around you? And we get feedback afterwards, whether it's from the chiefs or the wing commanders or the general population, civilian, active duty guard, reserve. We get feedback by the thousands that say this changed the climate, this changed the environment, this seemed to put a little bit more of a hop in the step of our people. So it may be that is the best assessment we're going to get. We have hired a PhD, Dr. Katie Gunther, who is a PhD in institutional and organizational assessment. This is what she does, the psychology of assessment throughout institutions. And she's working on some much more sophisticated measurements. But again, we've been in this business for a year, in PACE in particular, and a lot of those studies will require 3 and even 5 year studies so that we can begin to measure. For instance, if you go through one of our courses prior to command, we can get feedback after that course, but then 6 months into command, we'd like feedback. And then, of course, at the end of that command tour, at the 2 year point, we'd like feedback as well. And those longitudinal studies require time and data collection. And while we're doing that, we obviously don't have that in the short time we've been stood up. So a lot of different ways to measure that, but I always have to remind people that in many ways, we're measuring some social phenomenons that are difficult. How do you measure commitment? How do you measure loyalty? And once you do, can you correlate it to one particular event? That's not easy to do. But we know that we need commitment. We know that we need loyalty. And we know that we need trust. So our perspective is to maybe not get so lost in analysis paralysis and instead go after those things that we know are healthy, that we know we need to have at the center point of our strategy in the Air Force, and that's kind of what we're moving out with.
Understood. Well, wish you the best of luck, and thanks again, Dr. Smith, for spending so much time with us.
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate you taking the time to give me a call and ask the questions.
Dr. Jeffrey Smith is the director of the Air Force Profession of Arms Center of Excellence. He talked with us by phone from his office at Joint Base San Antonio. We'll post a link to that center's website where you can see some of the tools we've been talking about at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. And if you missed any of our conversation with Dr. Smith, we will post this week's full program, as always, at federalnewsradio.com. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks, as always, for joining us on DoD. I'm Jared Serbio. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.